Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you.
Welcome back to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. I'm Lee Brown, and I'm so glad y'all are here to listen to the latest and greatest of things that happen in real estate. And I've got y'all a guest today who I'm not related to that I know of, but I could be because her last name is Brown, and we know it's a very unique and special last name. Toria Brown, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
So I want you to tell our listeners why you listened to this podcast, because I thought it was something that was really telling before we get into telling your story.
Well, I have been to a few of your lectures, one of your boot camps, and I loved listening to you because I could relate to you, mostly because, you know, you cuss, I cuss, it works out. I started listening to the podcast, and I realized that I am not alone in Realtor Crazy Town. Other people have all these wacky things happening to them, and it's not just me.
It's fascinating. I mean, real estate is the most personal big investment people make because they buy on impulse for whatever reason. They walk into a house, their eyes start sparkling and they fall in love, and then they go spend $300,000 on something they fell in love with. And that house is unique because it's different and the buyers are different and the sellers are different and they all have these agents. And so you take that, put the multiplier effect on it across urban, suburban, rural, small town markets, and then talk to realtors and you find out that all the factors are different, but some of the same things happen all the time, but we don't know it because we're everywhere, all these little micro entrepreneurs. It's kind of fascinating on the macro level when you look at it. And I think we forget how cool our business is sometimes.
I think any realtor you talk to, nobody's done two of the same deals. There's always something new, something changes, people are different. The results are different. How people react are different.
And that's probably the biggest one you mentioned right there. It's not just the results. It's how people react to those results. And think about the inspection report. I mean, one inspection report put in front of three different people is going to generate three different reactions based on their level of expectation and their level of expertise.
Oh, boy. I learned real quick into the business to really pre-game people on looking at this home inspection and what it was going to be like. Because if you're a first-time home buyer and you're getting this home inspection and you think this house is awesome, but you're getting ready to spend the most money you have ever spent in your entire life, and then you get like 65 pages from this man and you all of a sudden are hyperventilating because you think that you're buying a pile of sticks and you can't believe you're doing it.
It's going to fall down tomorrow. You're like, nah, it's good. I mean, your mortgage is till 2049. You're good.
You're going to make it till then. And I promise you're not going to spend $50,000 fixing it.
Oh, we forgot to tell people where you're located, what market you work in.
I am in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. My office is located in Augusta County.
What a pretty place to live.
Oh, it's beautiful. Absolutely. Everybody falls in love with our mountains. You drive down 81 down through here and there's amazing amount of clients that are like, well, you know, we were driving down through here or we were staying here and we just fell in love. We never left.
And we take 81 when we're going up north. It's a way prettier drive than a lot of the other interstates. I mean, you got road construction, of course, but if you've never been on 81, listeners, you need to roll on over to North Carolina, West Virginia, Virginia, and ride up that way. And then you could do some Civil War history on the way because there's that big Shenandoah Valley campaign that happened, and there's a lot of good history. So you're in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. How long have you been a realtor?
I have been a realtor for just 3 years, 3.5 years, I guess.
What did you do before real estate?
I grew up on a farm. I am a farm wife now. So I work with my husband and my kids and my family. And I started real estate. I grew up, my mom always bought houses, and there's no other way to say it, but most of the time they were shitholes. So if mom says, we're going to look at a house, you're always a little bit worried. And you know, you put on boots and take a flashlight. We would buy houses. Well, she would buy houses and she would flip them and then she'd either rent them or sell them. So I grew up doing that, and we kind of had the childhood where you'd get dropped off with your cousins at a house with a sledgehammer and a face mask, and she'd say, I'll be back later. You know, as I got older, I would start helping with those more from the design aspect and helping pick them out. And we have a cousin who we were using as our realtor. Finally, one day he was like, this is ridiculous. Why don't you just get your real estate license? There's no reason for me to be doing this. There you go. I hopped hopped in 2 feet and hadn't looked back.
And are you glad you did?
I am. You know, this business is everything I anticipated and nothing I anticipated.
All right. So we have a lot of our listeners who have reached out that they are thinking of getting into real estate. They're trying to figure out what it actually looks like, because as you know, I mean, you're fresher to it than I am, because you just did your licensing just a couple of years ago. What they teach you in getting your real estate license has approximately zero to do with survival in real estate.
It is like a definition book, and it helps you do nothing.
I mean, it honestly won't even keep you out of jail, because you still need an attorney to answer your legal questions for you. But so knowing that it wasn't going to be what you expected, but you had the insight of a mama who was active in real estate stuff and a cousin as an active realtor, tell us what has been surprising to you as you have jumped in with both feet.
I think the biggest piece of advice that I have for anybody, and anybody who's ever called to ask if I like real estate and what do I think and should I do it, I've been thinking about it. And the first thing I say is you need to find a good brokerage. You find a brokerage that is there for its agents, that has got a good education program, a mentoring program, and that has a broker or a senior agent that you can call anytime, anywhere, and say, I have this and I need that, and what do I do? That's one thing that I love about, you know, my office, is that there's always somebody on call that can help me answer questions. Because let me tell you, in the first couple of years, and even today, I had plenty of those.
All right. I'm actually writing that down, because I don't know that that is a common thing, that there is an on-call mentor agent. Y'all have an on-call?
Well, it's not technically on call. It's just that I know if I call, I have a list of people, and if I call, they'll answer. Or if I send a message and say, call me back, I have an emergency, you know, somebody's going to call me.
Maybe I need to create that, because I'm just sitting here thinking, like, the on the bulletin at the church every Sunday, it says which one is the pastor on call and the deacon on call, so that all of the ladies in the church with their 9 by 13 can whip up a Baptist casserole and a hard Bennett and go save somebody.
Well, your new agents would appreciate it. They would thank you.
We're going to create this, sister, and that would make brokerages better. But, you know, you think about it, it is one of the most important decisions you make as a realtor, is where do you hang your license, with what broker? And it's one of the things that never gets discussed, because the licensing schools sell the ability to meet a broker for lunchtime and they give you the list of people, but that's not going to tell you how to pick somebody who's going to actually return your phone calls and return your texts. Because as you've already learned, when you need to get an answer to something, oh, you need it right now. You don't have 4 hours to wait.
And it never fails that it's like 6 a.m. or 10 p.m. and you're like, why are people texting me right now?
So in those 3 years of learning things and asking questions, I can't wait to hear what has been the craziest scenario you've encountered.
Oh, I mean, I think all agents have gone into that house that is trashed with liquor bottles and beer bottles and smells like pot. And you're like, and people are supposed to buy this. And you go in the bedroom and there's guns laying everywhere. Or they've encountered the naked man in the house that wasn't supposed to be there.
There's a lot of naked people in real estate. It's a little tough.
There straight is. Or when you're waiting on a client to show a house and a domestic dispute breaks out next door. And you're like, I think I'm going to wait in my car with the doors locked. But okay.
That's an interesting thing to consider, because when we talk about realtor safety, we often think about it in relation to the clients we're with or the houses we're going into. And we forget about the domestic scuffle that could be happening next door, because the environments we're operating in are often part of the scenario too.
Well, and that's true. That's true. But the particular story I was thinking of, and this one applies more to from an investment standpoint of it. My mom and I had just bought a house and we were going to flip it. We had kind of gotten started and, you know, like I mentioned earlier, we live in a pretty small town. I had gotten the phone call fussing because they couldn't believe we'd bought that house because somebody else wanted to buy it. And I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure I wasn't in competition with them. You know, they had their shot, but, but anyway, so we get working on the house and we're going along. Well, I show up one day and drop off some material or something. I don't even remember what I had, but I get there. There's a busted window. The door's been jimmied. There's new locks and there's a foreclosure sticker on it. I'm like, I'm sorry, where does that come from? So I try to call the number on the front and I don't get anybody. Of course, I tried again, still don't get anybody. And I'm like, I've got people coming to work on this house. Like, we're in the process, you know. I've got material I get to drop off. Plus, I'm just pretty good and aggravated by this point because I can't get a hold to anybody. I ended up having to kick the door in on my own house to get in. So you go in and you, so now I've got jimmy doors, broken windows. I go in the basement looking around. They've emptied my hot water heater into the basement floor.
That's just hateful.
But what got me was, what if somebody who was planning to live in the house had bought the house? Because the house was perfectly livable. I mean, somebody could have moved right in. What if you had kids? What if that was your home? Or are they just going to pop the door open, put your things on, and tape a sticker up?
Apparently so.
So it ended up involving calling the cops and a lawyer to finally get them to agree and or realize that it wasn't their house and that they were foreclosing on the wrong house. And it was a long ordeal. It's funny now, but at the time it blew my mind because I just couldn't believe that that mistake would even happen. How do you foreclose on a house that's not the appropriate house?
And then you realize it's because they're not in the local market. They're working off of computers somewhere with a report somebody sent in, and the left hand does not know what the right hand is doing. But I mean, this goes to a belief that I have, and part of the reason my personal money stays in local banks. When your local bankers live there, they're less likely to have scenarios like this crop up. But of course, big banks are everywhere and they own everything through the servicing market, and just scenarios happen. But it's also why you have to have a stable full of professionals to help you out, because you didn't know all the legal ins and outs of how to do this. So you had to be able to call your lawyer and say, help.
Yeah. What do I do? I mean, I'm back in the house, obviously, but that doesn't mean they're just going to disappear.
Right. They can come change the locks again.
Oh, and there were multiple times after that, after we had got the higher ups to figure out that this was not their house, we had multiple occasions where somebody that was coming by to take a picture or to check on the property and I'm like, dude, everybody get online here.
Stop. So that was something that helped you actually prepare to take care of your clients, because as realtors, when we go through our own scenarios, and especially when you've taken that history of dealing with investment properties, it's so much easier for you to talk to a prospective investor and say, well, just be aware that this happens and could happen on foreclosure houses, short sale houses, and just houses with oddball scenarios. And this one time, and realtors are notorious for this one time telling our war stories. But the reality is, we use those anecdotes to help people understand what could happen, because we've seen it. And if you've seen it once, you're liable to see it again.
Nothing's ever smooth. Nothing's ever perfect. Like, there's always going to be hurdles. You know, that's what I'm here for as a realtor, to help facilitate how we get past these. You know, there's never going to be something that works perfect.
If it's that perfect, we all sit on pins and needles just waiting for the shoe to drop.
Amen. But that goes back to what you were talking about with local bankers. And I'm kind of that way with anything. If you're getting a mortgage, I am all about having a lender that you can walk in their door, see them face to face. If you are working, no matter who you're working with, the agent you choose to help buy your house, the home inspector, your lender, whoever it is, somebody that will answer your phone call when you call and return that phone call. I don't want to talk to anybody else. I want to talk to you, and I want you to help me.
Yes, people. Do not go to websites for all your mortgage needs and all your real estate needs. Do what we do and go to those websites and hunt for information, but then talk to a human and say, this is what I found, help me out. Because that's one of your realtor's jobs, is to help you understand the context of a situation so that you know what that lender was talking about, what's happening with this house. And it's also why when you see houses listed for sale on some of these websites, it's not real, because it's entirely possible that this house that the bank thought they were foreclosing on was on some realtor's radar as a listing and had shown up on Zillow as an available property. You just never know. So call your local realtor and let us help you dig. That's what we do. If anybody wants good real estate information on not just buying shitholes, because you have information on that, but on, you know, farms and other real estate needs in the Shenandoah Valley, how can they reach you?
My number is 540-460-3246, or our office number is 540 943-0085, and there's always an agent there that can answer. And then my website is tbrown.odrva.com.
Don't worry, because if you didn't catch any of that, because you were just so enthralled by all the Southern accents in one episode of my podcast, it's okay, because we have all of Toria's information written down in the show notes for this episode, and it's not written in Southern. So if you're a Yankee, you can still understand it, and we still love you. And so thank you for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely.
It's good to hear from you, and glad to know that you are moving forward with survival and real estate and still having a good time.
Amen to that. Oh, I know. I was going to tell you my happy ending on my foreclosure house.
Oh yeah.
Sold it in 4 days above list. So even if it was a headache, it ended well.
Yes. That's part of the beauty of the investment and foreclosure side of the business. Sometimes you get to make good money. I mean, sometimes you break even and sometimes you go in the hole a little bit, because that's part of the game, but it's always good when it works out the way you wanted it to.
Amen to that.
All right, friends. Thank you for being on the show, Toria. Thank y'all for listening. Make sure you're subscribing for more. And if you have a story to tell about your own experience in real estate, you're a realtor, investor, inspector, broker, lender, or a normal human being, hit me up at Lee Brown on Twitter to be featured in a future episode, or just come at me on any of the social networks. But don't at me unless you're being friendly about it. I don't like people that are ugly in their ads, but y'all are generally pretty nice at listening to the podcast, because we enjoy some crazy shit, and we will see you next time.
If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.